Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program dedicated to telling the truth and exposing lies, and in particular those found in politics, religion, economic, and military institutions. Most of us do realize that these things are counterproductive, and quite frankly, they can't be fixed. I'm Kirk, and I'm filling in for Yada today, who should be returning hopefully on Monday.
He will be back Monday.
We'll be back Monday, good. And I'm, of course, the voice you just heard. I'm being joined today, so I won't be on the raft alone, is our producer and my friend, Scott. Good morning, Scott.
Morning, Kirk.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you today?
Well, not too bad. You know, the last few days we've been examining the Galatian letter. And I thought what we might do is to try to make some sense out of what we're hearing from Paul in the first Galatians 2 through 1 through, I think we're doing 1 through 4, 1 through 6. And then I was going to break it down a little bit later on his message compared to that of the disciples. But first, kind of give us a little background, especially if someone hadn't been listening the last couple of days, this should help. And then you jump in wherever, and we'll go from there. Is that okay?
Works for me. I'm going to listen to the recap. Paying attention.
Paul states that he showed up to explain his personal message that he preached to the Gentiles. And for me, I find that rather odd when I read it, because there's no one that I'm aware of in the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms that had a separate personal message different from Yahweh. So right away, that sends up a red flag for me if I'm trying to side with him. But his is his own, and it's unique, he says, and it is separate from theirs. So obviously, he's got his own little message, and it's not Yosha's, otherwise he would have stated so. And then, when he arrives, he states that no one is compelled. Now, this meeting was kind of set up, I think, primarily because he was preaching that circumcision was not important. And, of course, those of us who have read a little bit of the Torah, at least we know that circumcision is one of the five things that Yahweh asked us to do, male circumcision, asked us to do in order to be part of his family. So when he arrives, he states, he makes kind of a strange statement where he says that no one compelled Titus, who came with him, Barnabas and Titus came with him, to be circumcised. And to my knowledge, no one ever compels anyone to be circumcised or ever compels anyone to do anything in the Torah. The Torah is teaching and is set in free will. If you don't compel anyone to do something, then you would have a lord-serf kind of mentality. These are things that you have a choice in. You have free will, and you can choose to do something if you wish to participate in the covenant. But no one was compelled, so it's an odd thing to say, well, gosh, no one compelled Titus, as if that was a significant event. And quite frankly, it couldn't work any other way, because if you don't have free will, then you're not making any choices on your own to join the family. And then a third thing that we had been talking about for the last few days was that he states that there are these impersonators, these spies, who fake a relationship, that spy on him. And I thought that was really funny when I read it now, because I think those of us who've read a lot more of what Paul said, we know that Paul said that he is all things to all people. So to him, being a faking his
faking a relationship, it came naturally.
Yeah. So that was to him, that's a good thing. But all of a sudden, in this particular context, it's a terrible thing.
And world's best con man.
Yeah, he is, and it works. It works. He's allowed, but no one else is allowed, as if they were. But the whole funny thing about it, and we talked about this yesterday, that the people that are supposedly were brought in to plot clandestinely, to take away his freedom and to enslave him, they were somehow some strangers. Now, in that context of what was going on in that particular period in time, the followers of the way, the disciples, as we know, were terribly persecuted by the Pharisees, the Sadducees, and the Essenes, the establishment of the religious community in Jerusalem. So they would hardly be the ones that came in. And then later we learned that he calls them Judaizers, which is a very odd statement. That's an English word. And who would the Judaizers be? I mean, they're certainly not outsiders. So the only people that were in this meeting were Paul and two of his people that came with him, and the disciples, and the close, very close-knit family. And they're not looking to spy on him, and they're certainly not looking to enslave him or to take away his freedoms. I think they do have a right to ask him, or to state to him that your statement, that your message, rather, is not from Yahusha. I mean, why wouldn't you confront him if someone is lying about what Yahusha said? And so those were the things that first got me on that first little part of Galatians that should be red flags, all of us, on in comparing what Yahusha said versus what Paul is trying to claim that his new message is, as if somehow these things can be reconciled. Quite frankly, they can't. And he seems to be lying about stuff in his letter explaining his situation of what he confronted when he went to Jerusalem. So that prompted me, as I'm thinking about these things, that prompted me to do something that I do often when I have some kind of decision to make, is I will take a legal pad, and I'll draw a line down the middle, and then I'll put on one side the pros and the cons of an issue. And I thought we might do something like that today. So I've made a little bit of a list. First of all, now we know a lot more about Paul and some of the things that he stated. So what I made a list of, this is the character of Paul that I'm going to start with, and then we'll look at what he stood for, and then we'll look at what the disciples stood for. And so we'll start with Paul, and these are some statements that I can prove. I won't go into all the detail of proof to begin with, but we will go. Let me just list them, and then if you want to comment on some of these, please interrupt any time you wish. So first okay. of all, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I just said okay. I'm ready.
Okay. Paul, first of all, he hates Yahweh. And if you think about that, he is just like the rabbis. The rabbis had their Talmud, which is an argument, basically, where they decide what Yahweh, what the truth should be, and they contradict Yahweh. Now, the rabbi Paul, you know, he studied to be a rabbi. He was exactly in the same camp in that context. He can't stand Yahweh, otherwise he would embrace him. He does embrace the Pharisees because he studied with them, and he even worked on their behalf to hurt people. Now let's keep on going with this character of him and see if we can paint a picture of what Paul really is. We also know that in everything that he wrote, he never quotes not one word of that, not one time does he quote Yahusha. He never followed him when he was in Jerusalem. You know, he was there when Yahusha was in Jerusalem. And he never followed him. He never went over to see him. He never inquired about him. And then he says, for 14 years. Now, in the beginning of the Galatians, he says, in the 14 years, I finally came down to Jerusalem. Well, that's very odd because you would think, at least I would think, that he would want to meet with, learn from, join with the disciples. But it took him 14 years until now, and when this letter is being written, that he comes down to Jerusalem to meet with them. He declares that the Torah is invalid. It can't save you. He even says, it goes on to say, that it's pornographic. Now, Yah's Torah, as is stated, and Yahusha, they are the one voice and they are one word. They were the same, and they declare that it is perfect, the Torah is perfect, and that it is complete, and it will save you. But to him, it's invalid, and he even says it's pornographic, which is a
which also explains why he never went to see Yahusha. Or anything like that. Why would you be going to him and saying that everything you said in this is imperfect?
Yeah.
And pretty sure you get punched in the face.
Yeah. Oh, well, he might have punched him in the face, but I'll tell you what, he would get rejected real fast. You know, later too, we find that Paul, who, by the way, his name is Shaul. Let me interrupt my own self here for a minute. And Shaul, you know, that's a very odd name. Shaul, which is with a shin, an aleph, a wah, and a lamb. Pronounced Shaul, sometimes it's pronounced Sheol. Every one of these people's names have meaning. And I think if he was really chosen by Yahweh to say something for Yahweh, I don't think he would have had a name Shaul. Shaul, of course, means to question. Or it also can mean a place of questioning, such as the place that's designated to be the black hole where Satan will and all his minions will wind up being incarcerated. Shaul is a very odd name for someone who would be working for the, teaching the Torah.
It also, doesn't mean little and lowly?
Well, no, that's Paul. That's
okay,
the name
that's
he changes
Paul. Okay.
up to. And so when he does change his name.
So even from bad to worse.
No. Well, it also means insignificant, which we'll probably get to in a minute or two. But, Paul becomes, as we know, the most quoted man in history. But he doesn't have any, he doesn't quote anything, as we stated, doesn't quote anything from Yosha. And the one thing, he has one prophecy, I understand, and the prophecy never comes true because he prophesies that the Teruah harvest, which they call the, Christians call the rapture, would come about the same in his lifetime. And, of course, to my knowledge, it hasn't come about. So I'm pretty safe on this one. And Dabarim, which is Deuteronomy, the name was changed to Deuteronomy, in the Torah states that anyone who makes a prophecy, and even if they make 100 of them that are correct and they make one that's wrong, he's a false prophet. So we can scratch him off our list because of that all by itself. And we're going to continue on this list. It's when we come back from break. There's just a little bit more, and then we'll talk about the disciples and where they stand. You know, Scott, it's hard for just about anybody to walk away from family traditions and family beliefs and that sort of thing. And it was obviously very, very hard for Abraham, I would have thought. The reason I like to go through lists from time to time like this is because it makes it totally impossible to accept Paul. It makes it totally impossible to accept Christianity, which is founded by Paul, not Yosha. And so it makes it a little bit easier in a sense that we know this is right. We know that you can't accept these things. These are totally contrary to everything that God said.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that to me, it's important that we cover all these so there's really no stone unturned. I mean, so...
Yeah, and it definitely makes... if you look at it, he says he's speaking for God, and he says that everything that God told you before was wrong.
Yeah.
So...
How do you deal with it?
So... I guess I would look at everybody that came before that said they spoke for him. Did they ever annul anything that the previous person said? Ever?
I'm actually going to get to a quote later, if time permits, that will absolutely is contrary to that. It says that nothing has been annulled, and in fact, bear with me a second. I'm going to jump ahead just a tiny bit, and let me see if I can find that.
Because, I mean, if everything, I'm pretty sure in there it says that everything in here is the truth. You'll never find an error.
No.
And if you ever do, then obviously it's wrong. And even to this day, in 2015, there's no errors that I can see in it. Even like Larry even broke down the ark, how big the ark was.
Mm-hmm.
He even talked about how there was advanced math in getting something as big as the ark, the ability to float. So, I mean, the Big Bang, he talks about the giant lizards and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
all that stuff adds up. It's all there. I can't find any error in it.
No.
Even the language that he used is still used to this day and still the same. It's the same.
Yeah. They changed the little marks on how they do it, but, I mean, the letters are the same. You're saying the same words. It is a living language from the start to the end. So let me read something to you. I was going to do this a little bit later, but time being short, I always think these are going to last longer, and I'm not going to have enough information to discuss. But let's quote Yosha for a minute, and he said, "You should not think or assume that I actually came to tear down, invalidate, put an end to, or discard the Torah or the prophets. I actually came not to create a division," and I want you to read that as two testaments, "to dismiss or to invalidate or to discard, but instead to completely fulfill." Now, by that is to proclaim, to correct, to carry out, to render perfectly. He says, "Because indeed and in truth, I say to you, until with absolute certainty the heavens and the earth cease to exist, and so far to my knowledge they haven't said, we're still here, not ever under any circumstance shall one aspect of the smallest letter, as to your point, nor a single stroke of the pen cease to be relevant from the Torah, until with absolute certainty everything might take place." Now that's Yosha.
And if you, which is a solid source to go to, and if you look at it, when he talks about the divide, in the old, so-called Old Testament, New Testament, look at where that led. Look at even go to something like the Ten Commandments. The Roman Catholic Church breaks every one of those consistently. You shouldn't make a habit of killing. They had holy wars for years upon years. They burned.
That's a habit.
That's a habit. Yeah. People lived their entire lives going to war for the Holy Church. They want to take your money. They're
caught deception.
Yeah. And all those things are in the Old Testament is very much so against those. So Paul created a divide.
Yeah. And they ran with it. We'll be back right after this. If you can't walk away from Paul, then let me give you some things that are really, really difficult to deal with, and then I think you shouldn't have any problem. It really doesn't take this much information, but let's proceed with it, and then we're going to turn it over to the other side, the people in the meeting, the disciples and the inner circle, and we'll talk about what they stood for. Paul said he claimed that he was possessed by an evil spirit, that of Satan. You cannot work for Yahweh and be possessed by an evil spirit. He later claims that he's crazy, that he's insane. Well, that doesn't make you want to rally around his cause and listen to what he has to say. Crazy people don't really make a lot of sense. This is, I don't know how much common sense it takes to walk away from this stuff. And then he goes on to say that he's perverted. And then because he's perverted because he read the Torah and the Torah did it to him. That's the most absurd thing you could say. And then he tells people to accept his gospel, his message. Remember, he starts out with his message, his personal message, which is the gospel, God's spell, when God puts a spell on you, which is not what the Torah is about, it's not what Yahweh is about. And his gospel is being saved through the three graces. Now, they've cleaned that up to saved by grace like it's a really nice word, but he's talking about, and the old documents agree, he's talking about the three graces, which are those party girls, those pagan girls, pagan goddesses of Greek mythology. Yosha, in the way he paints him, the way Paul paints him, he becomes Dionysus, and what he's really preaching is Mithraism. Mithraism is the same pagan religion that you find in Babylon. Is exactly the same thing that Yahweh asked Abram to walk away from. He said, walk away from this stuff. Walk away from this politics and this religion and this all this marriage of horror. And then the only reason, if you really think about it, the only reason, just to make the full circle before we go to the other side of this sheet, the only reason that Paul would be against circumcision, that it became so important, is because Satan knows, and Satan is possessing this guy, he knows that the prerequisite, one of the five prerequisites for becoming part of the covenant family, is that you cannot participate in Passover unless you're circumcised. So if you can keep somebody from being circumcised, then they can't play. They can't go to Passover. It doesn't matter how much they think about it or how much they study. These are the deals. I have a right, Scott, to ask you when you come to my house, if you come in here and you got mud all over your feet, I have a right to ask you to take off. If you want to come into my house, please take off your dirty shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, this is not a horrible request. It's not life or death. It is not sickness. There's a benefit to everything, including circumcision. It's a minor. I've had some operations in my life, and I can tell you this is not the biggie. And this is a minor procedure. But if Yahweh has, he wants a mark where we'll remember it. And by George, that's perfectly placed, and you'll remember that you were dedicated to him. So from that standpoint, if you can sever that tie between the two, then Satan wins. Now, that's more than enough. Anyone who stands for that, anyone who would stand up before me or stand up before you with even a modicum amount of understanding of the Torah, and were to say these things, just common sense, along with the I'm possessed type of thing. Anyone that would say these type of things would be immediately dismissed. Yet it is embraced in all the churches around the world. And I realize they probably don't understand it. They've soft-sold it and rewritten it so it's easier, more palatable. But it's there, and you can't miss it if you're looking for it. So that's where Paul stands. And now let's take a look at where the disciples and the inner circle, the followers of the way, as they were really called in the early days. Let's figure out where they stood. And I think I can say without any reservation that they were Torah observant. Now, the Torah, as you and I both know, and most of the people who listen to this program know, is defined as not law, because there is the Torah is teaching. It is giving you directions and guidance and instruction and teaching you the path in which you should go to have life. We already did, he states early, Yahweh does, that is in Genesis, that is complete, whole, beneficial, lacking nothing. But it's nothing in there that's a command. In fact, I even looked up every word that's translated as command, and I looked up the Hebrew word that was translated to command in the English, and none of them mean command. There are no commandments. There are 10 statements. This is how you live. This is how you join the family. And this is what I want. This is your end of the contract, and my end of the contract is a lot more. I offer a lot more than anything that you may do. So this is where they stood. They were totally Torah observant. Yosef fulfilled the first of the four Mikras, the events that we celebrate every year. They had just participated in those. They had seen them. They'd seen the fulfillment, rather, of those Mikrais in the flesh and Yosha. And then they went, if you recall, they are now what the English Bible is called the Comforter. That's the set-apart spirit. Yosha prayed that they would, or asked Yahweh to send them the Comforter, and they were empowered, and that took place on the fourth of these Mikrais, these celebrations, the Shavuah, seven sevens, when they were enriched and empowered so that they could speak and tell this story. And hopefully all of us are enriched and empowered after we celebrate these things and we continue to study so that we can share this message as well. The path, you know, when they're called the followers of the way, and you can find this in all sorts of history books as well. It's not just where they were called the followers of the way. The path that they were going down is always described as that through the celebration of Pesach or Passover, Matzah, Bikurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Yom Kippurim and Tabernacles. And the first four have, with his five benefits, have been fulfilled. And now we're awaiting the last three. There are five requirements, and these people were very in tune with all of this. They're called the Mitzvah. And the Mitzvah is the terms and conditions that we agree to in order to become part of the family, the Bereth Covenant. There are five requirements, and there's five benefits. And if we had enough time, we'd go over those. We might want to save that for a little later. But I'm going to move on down the list a minute just so we can have some. I know they're kind of more like bullet points, but let's continue along this for lack of time. And then you have to understand that they observed not only the Torah, they observed the Shabbat. The Sabbath, the one day of week. Now, what I've learned, I don't know about you, Scott, but if you recall, in the last week or two, we started learning about an aspect of the Shabbat or the Sabbath that I had never really thought about. We were talking about what it'd be like to be in heaven and what it'd be like to be with y'all and explore the universe. And the 6+1, the rhythm, is really the rhythm of heaven. He works very hard. He plays very hard for 6 days, and then he rests. That's what we'll be doing. We'll go out and explore the universe in our 6 days, and then we'll take a day off to come back and rest and be with the family and tell what we experienced and see, tell what we saw and to share it with all the others and have a good meal and get rested up, and then so we can go and play some more. I mean, I never thought about that as being a rhythm in heaven, you know.
Well, everybody loves weekends, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's exactly, yeah. Exactly. But I never really thought about it in those kind of terms. But they observed the Sabbath. And the Christian church, of course, developed Sunday worship because it's Mithraism. They quote the Torah, which means if you quote Yahusha, by the way, you're quoting the Torah, because everything that we can find that he said can be traced back to the Torah. He was, as John said, Yohanan, he said that this is God's word. He is the living embodiment of the word. So everything that came out of his mouth was the very things that Yahweh said. And he doesn't contradict anything. We just read something a minute, or I just read something a minute ago, where he absolutely contradicts Paul. So they are Torah observant. They've agreed to the five requirements and benefits, so that means they were also circumcised. The men were circumcised. They were probably done that, most of them at birth. They observe the Sabbath. They share the message. It's not a message that they invented. It's not a personal message. It's a message that Yahweh spoke. It's the message that the Torah speaks. It's the message that the prophets and Psalms expound. They knew the way, and they also know and recognize a deceiver when they see one, and that's what the confrontation was all about. They did not embrace Paul. They sent him away. There's no record anywhere where they've agreed with him at all. So it's pretty easy in my particular case when I read enough of this stuff. I did it more early than late. I mean, I didn't need all this to do so, but to me it's very easy to walk away from Paul and the Christian church because this is not what Yahweh said.
Well, the disciples delivered Yahweh's message.
Mm-hmm.
Paul delivered his message.
His message.
This is my message.
Mm-hmm.
I'm special. I was chosen to deliver my message.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't he always say, and I say, and I say,
and I say,
and I say?
Yep. And I say.
Yeah. So let me read something. I've got a few little quotes here that might be of interest. And this, I think this is from Exodus, from the Torah. And Yahweh, let's stop right there. Yahweh, that's his name. That's his renown. He says, this is my name, this is my renown, this is my personal and proper name. I want to be remembered by this name. And my children shouted from the rooftops. So he starts out one of the 7,000 times, by the way, that is stated in the Torah prophet and Psalms. And Yahweh appeared to Abraham as God, as Elohim. And he said, I am God. I am God Almighty. choose of your own volition? Does it say choose because I'm going to hit you upside the head if you don't? It says choose of your own volition. You have free will. There are no commands in this, and there's no word for obey in Hebrew. To walk to my presence and become perfect. And we'll return to that in just a moment. God and Yahweh said, and Yahweh appeared to Abraham as God, and he said, I am God Almighty, Elohim. Choose of your own volition, your own free will, to walk to my presence. Don't bow down, don't crawl to me. He said, walk to, engage with, to my presence, which is Panei, which is face to face, looking someone in the eye, and come to exist, become. Exist is Hayah, the word was Hayah, which means to exist eternally. And to be perfect, Tamin, or Tamin. The Torah, this is the Torah, this is God talking to Abraham and to the future children called Israel, Israelites, and those who join the family. And so that's all there in the Torah. And that's how much more can you be than perfect? How much more can you be than with God and become part of his family? This is the way, and it's the same way, and he said he's never going to change a thing. Yosha, we just read, Yosha said, don't change a thing. So there's the so-called Old Testament, the Torah, Prophet, and Psalms. Now let's go to some remarks.
Let me just make a comment on that as well. What you just said is that the creator of the universe, the creator of everything, came down, and he gave someone a choice.
Yes.
Something that he himself... He doesn't even give himself that choice.
No, once he says it, he's on board, period.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's pretty cool, too. He can't come away from this and change his mind later.
Definitely. Continue on.
Okay. Well, then let's go to the other side. Let's go to these people that are in that room. Now, I don't know whether Matthew was in the room at the time. His actual name is Matanyah, which means a gift of Yahweh. But the thoughts are still the same. They were together throughout this life with Yosha and then this future afterwards. But then he says, and this is should be very familiar to people. He says, for then this is the Torah and the prophets. He didn't say this is the New Testament. He says, for then this is the Torah and the prophets. He says, begin by entering through the narrow, exacting, and specific doorway. What doorway do you think that is? That's Passover. There's only one doorway talked about all the time, and that's the specific, exacting doorway. He says, because the other doorway, that doorway is artificial and unreliable, and the way of life is wide open, which deceives and influences someone to go astray to the point of destruction and perishing. Needlessly, squandering their existence, their soul, and the vast preponderance of people start their journey through it. He says the doorway is exacting and specific, and the ways of life unpopular, which lead to life, and few experience it. How many people are there that are under the influence of Christianity, do you think?
It's over a billion. It's like 1.5 billion?
Islam is 1.5 billion.
Okay.
Christianity, I understand, is influenced. And now all of them are not Bible-toting churchgoers, but they are this influencing obviously over at least 2.5 billion people, where there's pretty much the dominant thought. So, I mean, I would say that's pretty popular. And how many are there in the covenant family? Gosh, not many. So when
not
you
many.
Read...
I think I saw a news report the other day that there are 15 million Jewish people in the world, and some of them aren't even in the covenant. So
very few of those are in the covenant.
Yeah. But, yeah. So,
and most of those are either. In fact, I don't know about you, but most of my Jewish friends are either agnostic or atheist or they're rabbinical. So that's a religion, and God doesn't have a religion. There is no word for religion. He doesn't want religion. He wants association with him. He wants to be part of his family and no middleman. The only time there was a lowe, that was to teach us, and because it was an uneducated population. Most of them couldn't even read when they came out of Egypt. They were slaves. out of the 1,000, that's why if you took a billion, just the number 1 billion, and you took the statement in stone, which is what is called the Ten Commandments, but as we know, there's no such thing as a commandment.
The Ten Statements.
Stones. It says, I save thousands that love me. Well, thousands among billions truly is one in a million. So when Yada throws that number out, he wasn't throwing it out casually. It's exactly that. So, guys, the hour's winding down. I've enjoyed it very much, and I look forward to talking with you on Monday. Thank you, Scott.
Definitely. Thank you, Kirk, and I will talk to you on Monday.
Okay, buddy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.